Welcome to another podcast episode of DIY Guitar Making. I also produce video episodes of DIY Guitar Making live in the workshop. To find both the podcasts and the videos all in one place, go to DIYGuitarMaking.com. You can even subscribe to the email list there to receive new episodes, both the videos and the podcasts, directly in your inbox as they come out. Again, that's DIYGuitarMaking.com. Okay, and we're on. Okay, let's do this. So first I'll just talk about some of the things that I have going on in my shop right now. And once I get done this video, I am going to be working on prepping the back and side sets for the spring and fall workshops. I don't have the fall dates out for the workshops yet, by the way, guys. I know I'm working on that. The spring dates are out and there's still availability there. So I'm going to be doing a lot of prepping today with these new gorgeous black walnut back and side sets that I got from Hearn Hardwoods. And also, I got started recently on that bird's eye maple neck that I'm doing. I just started with the scarf joint. I got started on that for guitar number 116, which is going to be a Florentine cutaway 13 fret to the body parlor guitar. It's going to be very interesting, very unique, and and also it's going to be all maple. Basically all maple. The top will be redwood, but maple back and sides, maple neck, maple fretboard, probably a maple head plate even with a veneer sandwiched between it to create some contrast. And that's what I'm going to be doing today, just in case, I don't know, any of you guys cared. but more importantly, it's about you guys, your questions. That's what we're really going to be doing today. So no reason to stall any longer. Let's just jump right into it. We're going to start on the Discord. So the Discord is the private members forum for students of my online courses and students of my hands-on workshops. Those are the people who get access to the members Discord. And then probably at the end of this, I will jump over to YouTube as I usually do and just kind of run through some of your comments and questions there, because, hey, that's fun too. All right, so starting off here, popping into the Discord, we've got LC Guitars writes, "This year, I decided to recreate the OM guitar that I built in 2018 during an in-person class with Eric." That's correct. Yeah, he took my class in 2018, and we built a guitar. What was it? He's probably going to tell me because he's recreating it. So he's going to tell me what it was. "I want to change a few things to upgrade the build, and I'm also going to build a matching dreadnought in the same woods. The guitar from the class has Tasmanian blackwood back and sides." Yeah, remember, I had a lot of Tasmanian blackwood at that time. I have very little now today. I still really like that wood, and I actually might want to get sort of invested in it again at some point. But that's what I was doing in 2018, Tasmanian blackwood. "Tasmanian blackwood back and sides with an Alaskan yellow cedar top. This will stay the same. I am changing out the cream plastic binding to ebony, the purfling from black, white, black to white and blue." And actually, my class is now all the binding is ebony, actually. Just a little side note there. And then also he writes, "The fretboard and the bridge, he's changing from cataloche to ebony with a white, blue purfling and ebony binding. So far, the sides are bent, braced radiuses, and kerfing installed. Today, I joined the tops and made the rosettes out of yellow cedar." He's got a picture of his shooting board there with the Tasmanian blackwood on there as well. You know, I like to think of Tasmanian blackwood as dirty koa. What I mean by dirty koa is Tasmanian blackwood is actually an acacia, which is the same family or group as koa. So it's highly related to koa. And if you look at it, you can kind of see that, you could be fooled that this is koa. It just has like some darker, dirty looking streaks in it. Koa has a much cleaner look and can get much more brilliant with its figure than Tasmanian Blackwood can. So it's kind of, I mean, I guess you could say, depending on your sense of aesthetics, Koa is a more aesthetically pleasing wood. But hey, if you like a little grunge, you know, if you listened to Nirvana back in the 90s, maybe you're into dirty Koa, you know? Maybe you want the wood to have a little bit of grit to it. So that's Tasmanian Blackwood to me. That's the way I think of it. Yeah, he's got some great pictures of his process there, which of course I'm going to throw up. Oh, and look, he uses the radial rosette maker jig, which I produce here in the shop. So I'll throw a picture up of that as well so you can see it in action. He's got his individual sections of his rosette laid out underneath the circle clamp of the jig. And next, after that, he simply routes it out with a Dremel on a circle cutting attachment. All right, Patrick writes, nice, can't wait to see what the blue looks like. Yeah, same. Same. Way to go, LC Guitars. Let's see, LC Guitars also writes, both rosettes installed with blue veneer on Alaskan yellow cedar. So there it is. That looks kind of cool. So he used sections of the soundboard, by the way, the yellow cedar, to create the radial rosette. And then, of course, to give it some contrast, he put some blue around the edges. Patrick writes in a follow-up to what we talked about in the previous Q&A, Patrick had asked if anyone had any advice on how to do binding around the inside of the sound hole. We didn't have much to say about it at the time, but it looks like Patrick went ahead and did it, so now he's going to tell us about it. He writes, got the sound hole bound with flamed maple, soaked it in Super Soft, which, by the way, is a product that you can soak woods in. I've never tried it myself, to sort of help along the bending process. It makes the wood more pliable. Soaked it in Super Soft for about an hour, and it bent around a 4-inch form without any heat. I think it turned out good for a first try. Oh, without any heat. Wow. Yeah, this Super Soft stuff must really, really work well then. Huh. No heat. All right. All right, LC Guitars writes, nice, how thick was the maple? And he says, I thinned the maple down to about 1.3 millimeters. Good to know. All right, thank you, Patrick. So it looks like that went well. Let's jump around somewhere else. Okay, Desi writes, hi, folks. I'm in the process of making my radius dishes on my CNC. The 40-foot looks good. When I calculate the 15 dish, it says it will cut through my 75,000ths of an inch stock. Is a 15-foot radius dish that deep? Yeah, now I have to think mathematically here for a moment. So give me a moment to wrap my head around the numbers you just threw at me. 75,000ths of an inch. Okay, that's pretty thin stock. Before I even answer this question, by the way, whatever you're using, let's say it's MDF, take a second piece of MDF, or maybe it's plywood. Well, you probably wouldn't use plywood for a radius dish because it has to burn through the different layers. Let's just say it's MDF. Slap a second sheet of MDF on there. So now you're at 150 thousandths of an inch. Yes, I did that math correctly. You're at 150 thousandths of an inch. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm saying this wrong. I don't want to confuse people. 0.75 inch. So he's 3/4 of an inch. Yeah, that's a massive, massive, massive difference. So now he's at 1.5 inches. If you double down your stock. So just glue a second sheet there. Regardless of it being a 15-foot radius, even on my, 40-foot radius dishes, which are much more shallow of a cut, I always put 2 sheets on there, even if the radius is already built into it because I just purchased it and I'm not having to cut it on a CNC, simply because it makes the dish way more stable over time, okay? So even if you are able to route that CNC route that into your 0.75-inch sheet of MDF. Add a second layer on there just for stability, because you're gonna, that MDF can and will kind of warp just slightly, and especially through use and everything, if you don't back it up with an extra layer. Just a good idea. So, I mean, I think that should answer your question pretty good. Then you don't even have to run the math to figure out if you're going to cut through your 0.75-inch sheet, okay? So just do that. Definitely do that. Oh, I'm sorry. And then he writes, figured out my own problem. I was making a 30-foot diameter circle for a 30-foot radius. Yeah, wow. You definitely don't need to do that. All right, Desi. Let's see what else we got here. Desi, I know, by the way, is new to the forum, so I should also say welcome. Welcome. Doc Joe, random question, and I did not know where to put this question. Regarding the paste wax that Eric uses on his rosette cutting jig, is there another alternative for this? I looked at Amazon, and it looks like a 16 ounce tub of this Johnson paste wax is $139. Wow, it definitely was not $139 the last time I bought one, but they last a really long time, and inflation is a bitch. And yeah, there must be, you know, inflation, even as bad as it is right now, is not going to put that at $139. I think there's something else going on. Maybe they discontinued that Johnson paste wax and there isn't much left. He writes, can I use any paste wax? Any cheaper alternatives that anyone is familiar with? There are some others on Amazon that are much cheaper, but I don't want to necessarily buy the wrong kind. Okay. And LC Guitars puts one in there. Okay, great. So I'm going to throw this up there. It's Minwax paste wax. But to answer his question more generally, it's just paste wax. You know, I put out that product so people had something they could immediately go to and click on. You just need paste wax. Anyone that creates something called paste wax, any wax, essentially, even there's even some oils that you could use for this as long as they don't make a mess. Because the goal of this is simply to keep glue from sticking to the jig. That's it. So there's actually a large number of materials you can use, but hey, LC Guitars gave us one right there, so I would just go with the Minwax paste wax. You could probably get that at Lowe's or Home Depot. Paul writes, hi folks, working on my first build, and while making a simple fix to a section of kerfing, I accidentally CA glued my sides to the mold. Oh boy. Recovered, but wanted to ask whether folks wax the inside. Hey, more comments on wax. Whether folks wax the inside of their molds. I'm a bit concerned about possible transfer getting into finish. Thoughts? You know, I put packaging tape at the two ends of my mold where the seams are. Let me just grab a mold to show you. So, for sort of that same reason, I put some packaging tape, because packaging tape does the same thing, right? It's just like wax paper, but the nice thing about packaging tape is it has an adhesive side, so you can actually stick it there and not have to worry about it falling off. But I just put it in those two locations because that's where I glue the blocks, and there's always a seam between the two sides there, and it's possible for glue to creep out between those two sides and get onto the mold. But I will say, it has actually never happened, even with the tape there, so much so that when I make new molds, I just don't even put the tape on anymore, just because it doesn't happen, to me at least. But it's not a bad idea to do that. As far as the rest of the guitar, I mean, I guess you could get glue down there, but it's, I can't imagine how you would. And I know you did here in this case, but it sounds like you were honestly just getting really heavy with the CA glue, and maybe using a too thin of a viscosity of glue for the type of job you were doing. Those water thin super glues, as miraculous as they are, if you don't need the capillary action of the water thin viscosity, then it's better not to use it because it makes such an ungodly mess. Now, if you get really comfortable with the bottle though and using it, you can be very targeted with it and it becomes a non-problem. But it sounds to me like you're just overly heavy with a very thin viscosity CA glue. Okay. And so protecting the whole mold in some way with a wax or something like that, as long as you're not continuing to do the same thing you did here, seems unnecessary to me, but we'll see what other people have to say about that. In fact, here are some other people. LC Guitarist writes, a good solution would be to line your mold with packaging tape. There we go. Glue usually doesn't stick to it. I put some on the ends where the blocks go. That's the exact same thing that I just talked about. Okay. But again, I want to stress, you know, having to... there's a role in all of this in Luthery for just developing self-control so you don't have to build stopgap measures into everything, you know, build little safety measures into every single step. I see this a lot with people wanting to put not packaging tape, but just, you know, like painter's tape or something, and put painter's tape all over the guitar at various steps where they're using hand saws or little tools that could nick the top or the finish or something. And if they just, sometimes that tape causes more problems than it helps. You end up pulling up fibers, the thing you're trying to protect it from, like glue, for example, just gets under the tape and creates a mess. And then you're trying to pull the tape off and the tape actually starts sticking to the guitar. So you're in a worse off place than when you started. The long-winded thing that I'm trying to get at here is self-control. Like, try to develop that self-control so that you're not flooding the guitar with glue or being too heavy-handed with your saws and things like that, and so you don't, you aren't tempted to have to wrap the guitar in tape or the mold or whatever you're working on. Okay? All right, let's see. Okay, here we go. Brian Bullard writes, has anyone built a guitar with a pinless bridge? Are there any disadvantages or advantages structurally or tonally? It's a different look for sure, but to me, it seems cleaner. And Lamar's Guitarist writes, I've seen several sensible looking designs that mount the strings to the bridge without passing into the body, i.e. passing through the back of the bridge like a top mount electric bridge. An argument against this is that you're pulling the bridge away from the top. Yes, that is an argument against it. Instead of pulling on both the top and the bridge, with the fear that the bridge will pull off. But I've never seen one that has come off, and there are builders who've done it like this for years. If you're going to mount a transducer-type pickup inside the body, it does occur to me that maybe having the string pass into the body and lock with pins might result in better transmission to those transducers mounted right near the pins. But maybe that wouldn't make a difference. Also, the bridge pins help orient you as to where to place the transducer contacts. Okay, thank you for that, Lamar. I don't know anything about transducers, but I agree with everything you said about the way that it pulls on the top. I've never done it, so I'm not going to speak to it any more than that. Okay, Patrick writes, this is box elder. Has anyone used this kind of wood? And he's got a picture of it right there. It looks pretty interesting looking. Yeah, we'll see. I'm going to throw that out there, and we'll see if anyone has an opinion on box elder as a guitar wood. LC Guitars writes, I recently bought a Rikon 8-inch. Oh, I'm sorry. Before I read this, I forgot at the start of this Q&A session right here, I forgot to read the question of the week. And in fact, you may have noticed over several Q&As going back, I have not been doing the question of the week. Not because I don't like the question of the week. I actually really have enjoyed that aspect of the Q&A, and I think it has created really good dialogue here between us. I just simply forgot. I have not been putting the question of the week in the Discord like I should be. And I suddenly remembered just the other day, and I threw a question up there, and I'm going to read it to you now. And I am excited to just get all the feedback from you guys. I only have a little bit of feedback so far because I just threw it up there. So the question of the week, where did I write that? Well, regardless, I'm not going to read it. I'll just say it off the top of my head. The question of the week is, what do you guys use for your sharpening? What process? And LC Guitars writes, by the way, I'm talking about chisels and planes. Your process for sharpening chisels and planes. LC Guitars writes, I recently bought a Rikon 8-inch wet sharpening system with a leather strop wheel. I use the wet grinding wheel on anything that is in rough shape or needs the angle adjusted. Then I use a honing guide on a 3000 whetstone by hand, then 8000. I then take it back to the machine and use the leather strop to get a mirror finish. Day-to-day sharpening can be done normally with just the leather strop wheel. Yeah, that seems like a great system. I like that. I use the Worksharp 3000. It's a dry sharpening system rather than wet. But I like that there. And actually, I'm open to trying new systems now for a reason I'll get into in a later Q&A. So I might even try something like that. Patrick writes, I just use 800 grit wet/dry sandpaper on my bandsaw table. Okay, very simple. All right, so that's the question of the week, by the way, guys. So hopefully you guys on YouTube will contribute what you guys use for sharpening as well. And when I say use, I don't necessarily mean systems, like the system, the purchased product that LC Guitars was just talking about, but I kind of mean just what do you do for sharpening, kind of like what Patrick said. He just put something on his... lays down 800 grit on his bandsaw table and uses that to hone or to sharpen. All right, and speaking of YouTube, let's jump over there and run through some of your questions. Buttered than a toast. Buttered than a toast. It's a weird name. Buttered than a toast writes, where do you get a chunk of such nice wenge for so cheap? Also, while it'd be a lot more work, piecing up a long video like this into smaller chunks would make it more digestible. Okay, we'll talk about that in a second. Wenge for cheap. So in my full build video that I put out recently for the Parlor Guitars, I show you a piece of wenge, a very large piece of wenge that I got for $40. That's from Hearn Hardwoods. I think wenge is cheap overall, though. I mean, I don't know if it's, maybe it's more expensive where you are, but wenge is not an expensive wood. It really isn't. But hey, Hearn Hardwoods is where I got that. And so then he also writes, well, it'd be a lot more work piecing up a long video like this into smaller chunks would make it more digestible for the average viewer and a bit more helpful. Referencing parts of this video is going to be rather difficult. I'm watching all 140 minutes because I like this better than I do movies. Thanks. Okay, well, great. Thank you. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. I can appreciate that this stuff is sometimes better to watch than movies. Movies kind of suck nowadays, actually. new ones, at least. So, buttered than a toast. I will tell you that these build videos, and there's no way that you would know this, of course, so I'm not picking on you here. These are actually just a compilation of the individual videos that I do throughout the process of a build. So actually, if you look back in my channel, in the catalog for my YouTube channel, you will see a playlist called Parlor Guitars. Go to that playlist, and if you really want to watch them in sort of individual chunks that are easy to reference, it's all right there as separate videos in the playlist. I will say that if you watch through that whole thing, it's going to be a lot longer than the full build two-part series that I'm creating, because there's a lot I cut out to make these full build videos more watchable. But hey, you might be into, you know, seeing every little detail of the process. So if you want to watch every little detail, but in more digestible chunks, Parlor Guitars playlist on my channel. Okay, Short writes, regarding rags, I apply UV cure finish with makeup sponges. I then wipe it with a paper towel. I am shooting for a low gloss finish. I sand lightly after curing before the next coat. I progress through the grits 400, 600, 800, 1200, 1500, 2000, and wax with Renaissance wax. I end up with a lovely matte finish. I control dust in my tiny 10-foot by 18-foot basement workshop with a large jet air purifier and monitor particulate with an inexpensive particle monitor. If I want a gloss finish, I use True Oil, slightly thinned, applied using scraps of old t-shirts. I lightly scuff with 4-aught steel wool between coats, no more than 2 coats per day. This is where the purifier has paid big dividends, as it has greatly reduced finish imperfections. Rags are not the only source of lint on a wet surface that slowly dries in the air. Good luck. Yeah, so this was regarding a question someone had with getting lint or sizing starches from their rags onto the finish itself. And thank you, Short. Actually, that's Keith Short, I know, so I'll say thank you, Keith. And I think that's that. I have nothing to add to that. That process sounds great there. I like that he's using a particle sensor for his shop. I've thought about getting one of those myself just for peace of mind for my lungs. It'd be nice to know, you know, I'm doing whatever I'm doing to take care of dust in the shop, but it'd be nice for peace of mind just to know that what I'm doing is working. So I might be investing in one of those at some point. I've been thinking about it. And you should too. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, maybe you should. I don't know. Okay. Keith Short also writes a photo of the... Okay, this is in regard to someone who... They had strung up their guitar, put it in the case, and then they opened up the case the next day, and the saddle had literally shattered. And we talked about in the last episode how it can be due to an issue with you got a bad blank, and it has some extra porosity in the bone, some basically defects in the bone. And also, he could possibly have too tall of a saddle, which would just contribute to the problem. And Keith Short writes, a photo of the failed saddle would really have helped. Also, the brake angle, no pun intended, as the strings bend over the bridge to terminate in the bridge. The combined bending and compressive stress can vary considerably. Yes, thank you, Keith. I didn't mention the other day when we talked about this, the brake angle itself. I just talked about the height of the saddle being a potential contributing factor. But actually, the distance from your bridge pin holes to your saddle, that's going to contribute to it as well, because the closer the bridge pin holes are to the saddle, the steeper that incline is and the more compressive stress, as he put it, is going to be put on that saddle. So it could be all three of these things kind of coming in together in a perfect storm. Saddle's a little too tall, bridge pins are a little too close, creating a steeper angle, and hey, it's not uncommon that you get saddle blanks that have defects in them, okay? Bone is not a perfectly homogeneous and consistent material. DALG Guitars Along the same lines, writes, JT, call Stu Mac and tell them you got a bad blank. They will probably send you out another one. They absolutely will send you out another one. Almost certain. Well, I say this and I can't speak for them, but their customer service is absurd. They'll just probably send you one out for free. They might ask you to take a picture of it or something, but that's basically their MO. The way they operate is, if you have an issue, they just send you a brand new thing for free. Most of the time. I guess it depends on what it is. Okay, and I'm going to get to work now. So thank you guys for tuning in. I'm going to go bend some sides. I'm going to thickness sides, bend sides, and I'm going to have a hell of a time doing it. I'm going to have fun. So I hope you guys have fun too. I hope you're enjoying your builds, and I hope you guys have a lot of ambitious builds for 2024. I know I do. So I'll see you guys in the next one. Bye for now.
If you learned something here, please give this video a like and subscribe so you can be notified when I release a new DIY guitar making video. And if you want to really learn more, take one of my structured online courses at ericschaferguitars.com or register for a hands-on guitar building workshop here with me in Burnville, Pennsylvania.